Virtus is a Latin word for manliness, but it also implies excellence and courage. Welcome to Virtus, a show dedicated to inspiring and cultivating virtue, character, courage, excellence, manliness, and honor. I am your host, Bo Hutchess. All right, we are back on the show. Welcome back to Virtus, and today got a special guest with me, Mr. Nathan Spearing. He's joining me from North Carolina, and we got a good show lined up for today. So that's we're looking forward to that. So first off, Nathan, welcome to the show. And if you could just If you could just give us kind of a little bit about who you are, what you got going on. I know you got a lot of irons in the fire, a lot of different disciplines, a lot of different things going on. Tell us all the things you got going on, and then maybe, you know, what you're kind of seeking to accomplish in life, your goal in life, your mission, your trajectory. Let's start off with that.
Okay. So I was born in Northern Alabama and the oldest of seven children and was homeschooled all the way through high school. And when I worked a congressional campaign after graduating high school and joined the Army the spring after graduating high school. So almost a year later. And the Iraq War kicked off while I was in basic training. And I finished basic training, airborne school, and then passed the Ranger indoctrination program and was assigned to 3rd Battalion, 75th Ranger Regiment at Fort Benning, Georgia, and served, did three deployments there, and got married between my, right after my third deployment with 3rd Ranger Battalion, did three more deployments with 1st Ranger Battalion in Savannah, and then we moved up to Fort Bragg area and kind of continued to serve there. So I have a total of 12 combat deployments. And then kind of at the kind of the last deployment that I was on was a Christmas rotation and was watching my kids open presents on Skype.
Right.
And was kind of felt micromanaged by bureaucracies that were kind of at play there, and just felt like really felt that being separate from my family hard that particular trip, and then also didn't feel as effective as a soldier on that particular trip, and just kind of everything came to a head for me there. I think we only had four kits at that point. We actually had our fifth between my last deployment and leaving the military, but I kind of was really hit me hard, and I was working through all those kind of things that you feel as a man. And if I'm going to felt like I was a good soldier, was good at what I did, but if I was going to be leaving my family behind and I was going to leave my wife managing the household, then I wanted to at least be effective at my job. Didn't really feel that as much as I had previously. And that kind of was the catalyst for me wanting to get out and wanting to be a present husband and father. And my oldest was kind of that last year. My oldest was 7 years old, and I had another seven more years to go before I could retire and get that government pension. That is kind of everybody kind of starts to get down that slippery slope on the backside of 10 years of service, and kind of every day is closer to that retirement date. So just felt like it was time. And so ended up getting out of the military about the 14-year mark. And most people thought I was crazy, because the kind of the adage in the military is once you've done 10, you might as well stay in, which is kind of ridiculous. Yeah. When you think about it, for a civilian on the outside, 10 years is a long time.
Right.
And even people felt like 7 years was just a short amount of time. Like, just get that government pension, just, you know, ride it out. And I was like, no way. I need to be with my family. And that was really the driving force behind that. And, you know, I've spoke about it on several other podcasts. I'm sure you've heard that work had, you know, I was experiencing a lot of vocational satisfaction being in special operations, and didn't really realize how much idolatry existed in my heart. It was kind of dormant, if you will, because I was able to do it, still try to be a really present husband and father part-time. You know, the soldier life is heralded in our society. And so there's just this satisfaction that you're doing something that matters. And then, you know, but then kind of come into the realization that that was inhibiting me to be a good father and a good husband.
Yeah.
And, you know, missing, you know, I was gone 6 to 8 months out of the year, pretty much consistently for my entire 14 years. So that's half the Sundays not in church.
Right.
And it's just, it just adds up. And so, decided to jump. My wife and I, and so I got out in 2016, but my wife and I kind of started, not really with an intentional plan, but to bought an old historic house in 2009. So about 7 years prior to getting out. And mostly because we wanted to be in a nice a part of town that was nice. And the only way that a, you know, enlisted guy in the military could have a house in that location was buy an old one that was broken down and needed a lot of fixing up. So as we started to look at the market, we found a 1600 square foot 1918 house that kind of had been updated a little bit, but still was very much out of style, very lot of things to repair on it. And we bought that. So we kind of had that side hustle, if you will, to use kind of the modern vernacular, but it was really motivated out of just, we want to live in a cool historic part of town, close to everything. And so as we started to look, and I just, oh, hey, we could buy this house. And I growing up learned how to do a lot of that working with my father. So I kind of realized, okay, I could figure this out based on the, you know, when I was 13, we bought a 3-bedroom house and added on to it and started doing that on the side. The cool thing about the military is that you do get a month of paid vacation a year. Mm-hmm. And then that's not counting all the federal holidays. So I think there's 12, 13 federal holidays, whatever they are, kind of sprinkled throughout. And oftentimes the military will take a 4-day weekend. So if the holiday falls on a Friday or Monday or whatever, they'll take Friday off as well. So there's a lot of downtime, even though you're gone a lot, there's a lot of time that's down. Mm-hmm. And we just kind of, because we bought this house, ended up kind of spending most of our leave, most of our 4-day weekends just working on this broken house. And it was really good for us too, because any kind of extra income, you know, disposable income, we were buying tile with, we were buying 2x4s. We'd rip a bathroom up and have enough to buy the vanity, but not enough to buy the shower, you know, or the fixtures for the shower or whatever. And that was okay too, because I was doing most of the work. So I didn't need all the parts right away. I kind of bought the stuff and, you know, laid the track out in front of the train, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of is like a savings account, you know, and caused us to put our extra money every week towards getting the bathroom back online that we missed not being online. And, and you know, or the kitchen's ripped apart. Like, we got to buckle down and buy this tile and get this, you know, get the kitchen, get the countertops back on. And, you know, but then kind of after we did our first one, we're like, man, we can do this. Let's do it again. You know? So we bought another one and just kind of kept rolling with that, and then ended up buying our third house the few days before getting out of the military, and just kind of building equity, rolling that equity into the next project. Mm-hmm. via various ways that you can do that with banks and loans, and then eventually had enough equity where we were able to buy this 8,300 square foot 1934 mansion with 11 bathrooms, and didn't really have but had at the same time been gaining expertise. So I couldn't have done that mansion in 2009 when we bought our first house, but we started out with the 1600 square foot one, and then we ended up doing the next one was a duplex that had a little over 3,000 square feet between the two units. And then, you know, so I kind of joke about it being my undergraduate, my master's, and then my PhD historic house.
Yeah.
as I left the military, we had some extra money because we had just cashed out on one of our real estate, bought the other one, so had some left, but then kind of found out last minute, and shared this before too, but we had to pay back a $40,000 re-enlistment bonus that we found out was going to get taxed. So we ended up So kind of knew I was going to have to pay it back, but kind of thought I was going to have some time to do it. But then they're kind of like, you have to do it right at this week. So we just kind of bit the bullet, moved into the house without heating or air conditioning, central heating or air conditioning. We went and bought a couple window units and put some gas logs in a couple fireplaces.
Yep.
And made it work just so that we could get another unit rented. So we had that duplex still. So we wanted to get out so we could rent both units of that, and then started a construction company. And mostly because we had accumulated the tools and some of the technical expertise there along the way, and needed to, you know, in light of being a lot less cash on hand, needed to make some money and just started trying to figure it out. And I call that my school of hard knocks MBA, running a small business. Mm-hmm. And trying to figure out all the things that go along with that, you know. And I kind of wrongly assumed going into it that it was going to be predominantly a technical thing running a construction company, and underestimating the amount of business knowledge that I was going to have.
Right. Yeah.
And so I just kind of kept having to figure that out. Actually, you know, I had a lawsuit pretty early on with some clients that were not the easiest to deal with, but also kind of having to take ownership of what I messed up as well. And that ownership looked like a lot of money that I didn't expect to spend, and legal fees and things like that. And just kind of God being gracious to, you know, we didn't sink, we didn't go bankrupt. We didn't lose everything, but, you know, kind of felt like that was in the cards or possible some months, you know, being just that reality that you don't know how you're going to pay all your bills on the first of the month, stuff that's coming due, and looking at where cash is coming from and when invoices are coming in, and still having to do good work, even if you messed up the quote and you didn't give yourself enough, you know, runway to do this for a client, still try to make the job do excellent work. Despite the fact that maybe you're doing the job at a loss, and just work through all that, and God being gracious to just kind of continue the sanctification, the sanding of all the rough edges and the things that, but realizing that He's faithful and gracious enough to not give me anything that would take His place. Yeah. And if He feels me kind of white knuckling some things that I shouldn't, to strip that from me, even if it's painful.
Yeah.
But then just having that hindsight optic now, having gone through kind of the 2020 shenanigans that have kind of thrown every single person through a loop in some way, shape, or form, and realizing kind of the having our hands in a couple different pots, and just seeing how God was able to allow us to kind of sail through that because of just a durable, diverse, productive household.
Yes.
That wasn't our grand design back in 2009 when we bought our first fixer upper, but that ended up giving us the financial cushion to make a decision to leave the military, to have enough runway to start a small business, to kind of have productive property that was working for us while I was trying to figure out how to start a business. And then now, even almost paying for everything itself and giving me the ability to take some time in the middle of the day like this to have conversations with you and try to encourage other believers to kind of boldly advance and do what God has laid for them, despite whether or not there's financial security immediately in that future, but to do the hard work and to get there. So, you know, it's been a phenomenal journey, and still, like you were saying, we were talking about early in the intro, just still having to humble myself and confess to my wife, to my kids, to my clients, to my employees, and try to live faithfully and trust the yield to the Heavenly Father. And it's just been fantastic to just see what He's done in the last 5 years. So this December will have been 5 years since I left the military. So just to see how, what we've been through as a family communally, and what the Lord is doing is a blessing. And I really feel like I wouldn't have got that, wouldn't have learned about the Heavenly Father and His faithfulness if I had played it safe and continued on that government pension, you know, or can that direct deposit, you know, that you're getting twice a month from the military. Mm-hmm. And by kind of taking that leap of faith, I'm able to see other parts of His character and see His provision, you know, a lot like the Israelites in the wilderness, you know, not gathering manna for one day, you know, having enough for that day, and, yeah, and having the faith that when they woke up the next morning, mm-hmm, that it'd be there on the ground again, exactly, and that God would provide. You know, it doesn't make sense in the wilderness that there's going to be food for the entire nation, yes, but he provided miraculously. Yeah. And He does that for believers as well. I think a lot of us in America don't ever get in that position, right, because,
oh yeah,
we're comfort. We got, yeah, comfort, and, yeah, and we tend to trust not in God, but trust in money, mm-hmm, trust in our emergency fund, trust in our W-2 if you're an employee. Yep. And there's a lot of W-2 employees that learned how secure that job was last year.
Yep.
and even just kind of walking out my experience being like, okay, when you know, March, April 2020, things started to shift and turn to really be in the driver's seat for pretty much everything I was doing, whether or not that, you know, whatever vehicle I was in, for if it was, you know, for construction for clients, they, several people canceled big jobs right away. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, we had Airbnb let everybody cancel, mm-hmm, penalty free. So we had one Airbnb booked solid for a couple months, and they all just went away overnight almost.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, and so seeing that happen and then seeing, okay, we just finished, we have some money set aside to kind of finish this remodel. We just finished closing a round of financing on this project, and we got powder to push on our own investments for a little bit while kind of things stabilize, and that, we had long-term renters in one of our units that were military. So they were still paying rent on, mm-hmm, time. And so, you know, kind of had only two units on the market at that point. So one was short-term, which ended up being not great because everything canceled, but then a long-term one to kind of continue to offset the losses until Airbnb came back, you know, roared back because people preferred,
yeah,
staying in houses over staying in hotels, mm-hmm, go figure. Right. So ended up, in the long run, outperforming and being a great industry to be in the long run for 2020, but for March, April, May of 2020, not so much, yeah, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's probably the most verbose intro of a podcast you've had, right, yeah, to give you a bunch of stuff to maybe drill down on for your listeners and take it, you know, wherever you want from here.
Yeah, that's great. And actually, I think you even left out a couple of things that are still pretty cool. I know you got your Warriors Tending Garden shirt on, you know, you got that aspect,
oh, yeah,
that you've got going on, and you guys were homesteading, you know, so as if, yeah, you guys weren't busy enough, there's two more things to throw on top of it. So,
yeah,
that's great.
Yeah. Well, I think that as I watched the church and as I watched men and as I had conversations with guys at church, with guys on social media, realizing that even as 4 years into business and things kind of getting scrambled on us and having to make decisions and pivot, you know, mm-hmm, as they say, and come up with new things and seeing just, I had to kind of come to grips with the fact that God was sovereign and reigned over everything when grenades were getting lobbed at me or AK-47s were going off in my face, and had to kind of really walk that out then. So then to see kind of other men in the faith and leaders in the faith and just kind of freak out over things and or was it money? Is it government mandates? Is it things that are changing and even not knowing how to look up the true story and how to go actually pull executive orders direct from the governor's office versus reading headlines and just, I lived a big chunk of my life in chaos in all over the planet in different climates, whether it was war or, you know, in countries that are kind of internally fighting terrorism and things. So I've kind of learned to be flexible, learned to think on my feet, saw God's provision and protection. So it kind of solidified all that for me. So as I kind of saw men of the faith and churches and things kind of freak out for something that in the long run ended up being something that maybe, you know, I think the history books will say was a pretty big overreaction, regardless of the reality of the virus, regardless of the deadliness that it is for people. We all didn't handle it like we could have, or didn't handle it responsibly, organizationally, individually. And so I kind of had this desire to start talking about what the Lord did while I was on active duty, how he protected me, how that matters even here in the U.S. for us. It's, he could protect you. If you're in living faithfully, he can protect you wherever you are, and to live boldly. And then just even seeing how our businesses perform. This isn't, you know, I'm not posting pictures of myself on a private jet or on in a luxury sports car, but being able to be a master of my time, to sit down with my wife in the beginning of the week or in the every morning. Hey, what do you got going on? Okay. Hey, can you stay home and be for the kids while I go over and check on the Airbnb? Yep, I got that. Can I go do this? And just really being able to use our time towards what we want to. And even telling, I did an entrepreneurial forum with some veterans a couple of weeks ago and just said, you have to, as early on in life as you can, realize the resource that only resource that matters is time. And how are you using it, and how can you use it more efficiently? And so that's kind of the Warriors Tending Gardens is the kind of the spinoff of some classes that I'm doing. We did that first, the inaugural one is in May, or was in May, of this year, and we're looking to do another one in January here locally in North Carolina. Actually have that on our website, and trying to kind of create these opportunities for men to get together to discuss how we're tending the garden for in our life. What is it that we're growing? What is it we're putting our hand to? And then are we also, as a kind of support function, thinking about what protecting it means, what defending it means, whether that's making sure we're homeschooling our kids versus sending them to public school, or making sure they're getting private education, and you know, and on all fronts. This is, you know, in the military calls it UW, unconventional warfare, and realizing that spiritual warfare is unconventional, and defending your home isn't confined to having a bunch of guns, you know, part of it, and knowing how to use them. And, you know, and also we, you know, you, both of us understand the importance of being in shape, you know, that's doing the work to be fit, to have a sound mind, to not be the guy that's winded in after running 25 yards, you know, and just how, It's a complex thing and a complex discipline to be a man. There's many disciplines that go into that, and it's human nature to focus on the things that we do well and to kind of put those out front and center, specifically on social media, specifically when we go into church. You know, it's easy to talk about those things. It's easy to let the you know, stuff that you do well, be out in front, you know, and then not really give certain parts of our life to God, or to not be serious and to say, oh, well, you know, I don't have to be in shape because, you know, I'm just, I got a bad knee, you know, or, you know, I was talking with, Mike Irwin, who, runs Team RWB, which is just a nationwide nonprofit that helps veterans after they get out, keep being physically active.
Right. Yeah.
And he's, you know, talking about, you know, veterans be like, oh, I got, you know, hearing loss, you know, and tinnitus is like, how is a hearing loss, you know, and maybe saying you got your equilibrium's a little off or what, but yeah. Like they'll use a veteran who for a big part of his life worked out, mm-hmm. will then use these excuses or these service-based injuries
yeah.
as an excuse to not keep being active afterwards. And it's critical to mental health, mm-hmm. and it's critical to just to health, your brain. So, I mean, in my first course that we did, I made sure that we did two workouts. Like we're going to get up, you know, we're just maybe a little bit of, you know, sitting around the fire, with some drinks and chatting and sharing. And at the same time, let's set the alarm clock and get up and let's go run up to the top of these. We didn't have any weights or anything. So we did some workouts, and some guys had some come to Jesus moments, out there, you know, and it was actually at altitude too. We did South Dakota. So it was, you know, 4,000 feet, something like that. I think you that may not sound like altitude for you.
It's it's not, but it's higher than, you know, sea level.
Higher than 60 feet, which is where we are, you know? So, you know, going from almost sea level here to 4,000 feet, mm-hmm. I was feeling it some too.
Mm-hmm.
So just, you know, and there's just been a lot of great conversation that happens, you know, and even the podcast and this conversation now is kind of me just putting the flag in the ground and saying, we're going to all gather here. Going to do this course, whether we weren't really sure if anybody was going to sign up or not, you know, and having conversations going into it, with the cross politic guys about, you know, well, how many show up when are we going to call it? If only however many show up, we'll say, well, let's make that call. We can always just give them people their money back and cancel it. So it was great. And we have a text message group that we're all sharing still to this day, you know, a bunch of guys on there, prayer requests. So there's kind of like these little auxiliary networks now with other guys that you shared some experiences together and had talks around the fire and continue to this day. So hoping that Warriors Tent and Gardens becomes this catalyst for some grassroots stuff happening around the world, with men getting together. One of the guys has a monthly Bible study, and they do a monthly Bible study, and then they shoot or work out together, bring their sons, and it's doing really well. So even kind of talking with them, what's that look like, and how can we enable that happening locally with men? Because a lot, even if your church has sound teaching, sometimes that can still be a little bit nebulous, mm-hmm. for a man, you know? Yeah. Okay. Great. Pastor, confess your sin. All right. You know, but then leaving, walking that out. And what does it look like specifically to excel in business, you know, and have it? I mean, like C.R. Wiley, he's a businessman, maybe more than he is even a pastor, you know, like that guy's got a huge real estate portfolio,
mm-hmm.
was the general contractor on his church's remodel, mm-hmm. You know, and has this understanding and theology of what work looks like. Because that's like, you know, my dad's kind of always said it, the Great Commission's not in Matthew, the Great Commission's in Genesis, you know,
absolutely. Fill the earth. That's the start, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it, what filling and subduing looks like, you get the train coming through town right now. It shouldn't take that long. but yeah, what that looks like for you, defining that as a man and then doing it well, mm-hmm. and excelling at it. And not just being the guy that's like, I did better than 80%. I'm top 20%. No, like Christ is, it's not, you don't want to be top guy because you want to get glory for yourself, but you want to be top guy because and reach your full potential, because that's how you use your talents that the Lord has given you fully.
Amen.
Is by giving it all.
Mm-hmm.
And in the military, like there was just this, you know, guys looking at you being like, oh, you're a Christian. You know, how can we trust you to do what it takes, you know, and realizing that, and guys literally not even understanding that, the Christian warrior put everybody else to shame, you know, back in the Old Testament.
Yeah.
And even having those conversations with guys.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that a lot of people, will pass out a track or talk about Jesus in kind of a really nebulous way, maybe at work, but in some ways where is your work so good that people are asking you, what are you, I mean, like guys literally asking in the military, what are you on? You know, like, it's like you're on drugs, man. It's like, yeah. Hey, Jesus, man. I mean, that's, I'm fired up. I'm excited to be here. I believe that God's put exactly the circumstances in front of me,
mm-hmm.
For my good. I'm a partner with him in remaking this earth now, and I'm doing it. And I got to be excited about it, because that's another thing is, you know, my first year or two out of the military, it was miserable because of my heart posture.
Mm.
I had a bad attitude about construction, and I still fight with that. You know, I mean, some of that realization to say, you know, it'd be awesome to be traveling the world and giving these speeches and talk about veteran issues and work and, you know, but I got to come back and I got to do good work. I got to do construction that is not glorious, but that, you know, I know the profit margin's there. I know to keep working. I know that it's a need,
mm-hmm.
And to keep doing well at it, and to make sure that I'm not doing the fun things at the sacrificing things I should be doing. And then I guess from the homestead perspective, we got some chickens now, we got some raised beds in the small half of the house in town. But we did close 20 acres trying to get out there as fast as we can. Cause I don't, have you read Durable Trades? We talked about this yet.
Yep. I read
that.
Yeah.
So I looked at that book and was like, okay, I got a couple businesses kind of in the, what he would call the secondary market.
Yeah.
I take raw goods and I make things with the raw goods.
Mm-hmm.
I provide housing, you know, some of these things that are definitely durable, but I'm not in any primary anything. I'm not actually producing anything. So I kind of was like, always wanted land, started reading Joel Salatin, started following Justin Rhodes, you know, some of these guys that are pioneering the regenerative, homestead kind of stuff, and just being like, wow, this is going to be fun.
Yeah.
Like, I'm excited about this, and kind of so pairing that with the durable trades, and then realizing that the fact that I already have productive property, I have multiple rental properties, we got money coming in, is actually enabling me to figure this out, you know, and to go a little bigger. I bought, you know, the Joel Salatin says to think that you have to buy land, start farming. Like, you can do stuff in your garage, you can do stuff in the backyard, and a lot of people never start.
Mm-hmm.
And so that convicted me, because I'm like, oh, I'm on the track to homestead. What can I do right now? So let's buy some chickens, let's do some raised beds, start to figure this out on a small scale while we were trying to close this land. But at the same time, like, allows me to buy maybe more land. I cannot efficiently put 20 acres to use right now. So if it was really about making money and a business decision, it's foolish for me to buy that much land right now.
Yeah,
because
you're not stewarding the small stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to take me a decade, 2 decades before I probably figure out how to use all of this land.
Right.
But I can go ahead and buy that land. I can take on that additional overhead of land because I have these other businesses. And we can get out there and have, you know, some of that's just, let's let the kids have a creek to play in and kind of run wild, free range it.
Yeah.
So it doesn't need to all come back to how am I going to make some money from this right away. I have a little more runway now to kind of slowly figure this out. And we could start using it for campouts like we're going to do this weekend. And I wouldn't be able to do that if we hadn't done, you know, a decade plus now of real estate. And it's enabling kind of these additional things that I'm super excited about, but there's not a ton of pressure to, that they see a profit right away. I got margin to sort of figure it out. And I'm excited about having, you know, as currency does what it's doing, you know, I talked to a lot of people about, you know, they're on the Bitcoin stuff and the different ways to kind of protect yourself against what the dollar is doing. And I'm really happy where we're sitting right now. You know, we have service-based trades. We got tools that can create a product at whatever the market rate is, and then getting into food. I'm excited about that, and having something that's going to hold value, you know, no matter what the market does.
Yeah. Well, I think you've hit a ton of stuff that is super valuable, you know, just you're sharing your life and just some of your experiences, but also some of the ideas relating to COVID and just, you know, anti-fragility, durability, households, all those types of things. So let's kind of zoom in on the household economy and maybe, you know, you kind of mentioned some stuff, but let's talk, you know, entrepreneurship. You talked some lessons that you learned. Maybe if you could give some advice, you know, for people who are wanting to become durable, wanting to maybe get into real estate. You know, sometimes I think we glorify self-employment, which it is glorious, right? It's awesome. Like you said, you're a master over your time, but sometimes I think we miss the burdens of self-employment, you know? So to give guys a picture of, you know, productive property, all that stuff, maybe some general advice to myself, to other guys who are interested in, you know, moving beyond, like you said, the W-2, not that having a job is bad, but like you said, it's fragile. I think you mentioned C.R. Wiley in his book. He said that, you know, a safe, secure job that was with benefits was made up by corporate employers. You know, that doesn't exist. And we saw that with COVID, you know. So maybe some advice to aspiring entrepreneurs, some advice for guys who want to get on the path that you're kind of walking down.
Yeah, well, I think that that W-2 enabled me to be an entrepreneur.
Sure.
Because like we talked about at the beginning, is we were taking disposable income and we were putting it towards things that kept their value or increased the value. Right. So with real estate, it's super nice because it's a secure asset. Banks will lend against it, you know, and if you're living in it and it's your primary home, then it's the cheapest money you can borrow, you know, and I, you know, people kind of come down all over the place on with debt. And, you know, I believe that, first of all, money shouldn't be worth anything to us. You know, I think, can't remember what theologian just saying, it should be as dirt, you know? And so personally, kind of where I've come down on that is if money is dirt, really is, and so is debt, you know, so is everything that is of this world in a sense, you know, like that. And if I can, you know, use it to work for me,
right,
and it's not truly out of a desire to have this lavish lifestyle or to just keep upping my consumption, it's actually to be fruitful and to produce, then it's okay. And so in those ways to say that you can achieve a lot more if you can borrow and leverage it. I mean, that's essentially what it is. You know, and I asked my dad about it because I've read Larry Burkett, Business by the Book, you know, and he's very anti-debt in there. And I kind of said, hey, what do you think about this? And my dad's like, well, you know, when you look at the parable of the talents, you know, and I'm not a theologian, but this is kind of just a conversation my dad and I, you look at the parable of the talents, what does the master say to the wicked servant? Said you could have at least given it to the bankers and it lended out at interest.
Right.
So it's literally like the minimum that you could have done with your talents mm-hmm. is profit from lending, you know, and then there's obviously for our brother but like there's, in some of those, the example of like the minimum is using your money at just the minimum interest rate. You should have been able to, there's lending going on in that parable in a sense. Mm-hmm. So understanding that debt is, The Richest Man in Babylon, I don't know if you've read that book or not, like it's a really good it's a short little book, just has the rules of gold. Okay. And it's basically gold labors and bears children, and continues to labor endlessly. So if you know how to put gold to work, it essentially will labor. So debt is more gold that's working for me and making more children. That's interest rates, that's property values, that's rental income. So it's a way for me to get more servants working for me, more gold working for me earlier on. Mm-hmm. Now, everybody has to do a really good, honest analysis before the Lord, how leveraged they want to be.
Yeah.
How much debt are you going to take on, and how much risk is there? Because there's obviously a part of this tension between that to say, I'm just going to take all this money and I'm going to go all in on something. I don't have all the expertise to make it actually fruitful.
Yeah.
And I'm going to put myself in a really bad position. And so specifically for me, that looked like, the first property we bought for $175,000. So I had to come up with 20% of that. And then, which I think is 33,000, something like that. Mm-hmm. And then we borrowed. So our payment was $900 a month, and that was cheaper than any rent of a house anywhere.
Right. Yeah.
We got that $33,000 down payment that was from an enlistment bonus, So I enlisted in the military, re-enlisted in the military. They gave me, at that time I got $40,000. So mm-hmm. I was 26 years old and I got 40 grand, and I put that into real estate. I mean, almost all of it immediately on a down payment. And I didn't have any left over. So I have a broke down house. I mean, the house appraised. So the bank, it wasn't so broken or messed up that the bank wouldn't lend on it. It passed inspection. The condition of it was good enough that we could still get a loan on it. But it was out of, it was 80s bathrooms and kitchen. There's some peeling paint inside. So sunk all that bonus into something that was going to produce, and then had to actually continue working my W-2 job to buy the materials, And my, for a younger guy that's trying to buy a house, a fixer upper or whatever, if you're married, if you're single, this is great to do when you're single, because you can live in some nasty houses as a single dude.
Yeah. Most single guys
work on them.
Most single guys live pretty gross already. So it's not like it's that big.
Exactly. And my younger brother, he bought a house and finished the basement and rents the basement out, and lives above. And so he figured out a way to kind of make that a multi-unit situation for him.
Yeah.
And fixed it up. And it was nasty for a while, so that would be the thing, as early as you can start as a man and the nastiest stuff that you can buy. And I've actually we know people, gals that didn't get married right away and were like, I'm going to buy a condo. I'm going to do this. And actually, you see in Proverbs 31, she's dealing in real estate, mm-hmm. So these kind of situations where like younger people be like, man, I'm waiting for Mr. Wright or Mrs. Wright, and kind of sitting around thinking that there's nothing to do until I get this dream woman.
Then I'll start. Yeah.
Then I'll start. And that's kind of it. I read, John Acuff has a book called Finish. And in there, they say that, a guy, the way that you never start something is essentially you staying in control. Because if you started, you might fail. Mm. If you started, you may mess it up. You may not be quite as good as you think you will be at it. But if you just never start, you get to control the end. I would be so awesome at playing the violin. I'd be such a great guy at real estate. Like, and you just get to create this image of how awesome you'd be and then never start and just remain in control the whole time. It takes faith to go for it and to do it. So obviously having to do a good assessment of where you are in life, but realizing that, being, you know, maybe 18, 19 years old, buying a trailer home, you know, a mobile home, you know, in a sense, or a double wide and fixing it up and then renting it, you know, and say, oh, I'm gonna buy this, you know, I've heard so many stories of guys buying, you know, $175,000 house is a higher price point maybe, than a lot of real estate. You can get some houses that will rent, after a little bit of work for nothing, you know, and you can buy them cash, you know, so that's, you know, and if you're married, you got to be in the same page with your wife about it. Because living in a fixer upper is not always shown on HGTV what that's like, you know, there are, or it's shown and that's the good footage. Cause there's some drama going down.
Or, you know, the whole renovation takes place in an hour, you know,
exactly
6 months or whatever.
Yeah. And so my wife is so resilient and so flexible. And has kind of adapted to that lifestyle so well and so supportive, but it still gets pretty daggum raw sometimes on our bathroom remodels or at midnight when we're laying tile together or something, you know. It helps your marriage and helps expose some sin in my life for sure.
Yeah.
But you know, and I've walked through houses with guys and the wife walks in and it's like just wrinkled up nose, and I'm like, don't get it, you know. If she's not, and you can't make her get on board with this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But some of that may be just educating, say we can tolerate this to get to a point, you know. And I think that even just our story of kind of where we are now with three rental properties essentially, and we're about to close this farm, and we kind of are 11 years almost, you know, or a little over 11 years now. That's not, if you start that at age 18, 19, you're still pretty dang young when you're self-sufficient, you know? And I started at 26 and I had two kids. So it was a little harder. You know, we had some nights where the kids are pack and play, you know, and we don't even live there. We put them down in a bedroom up in the top corner and we worked and we moved them to the car seat and go back home and sleep, you know, at 1 o'clock in the morning. And so I think, so that's, I guess, one is put your money to work, whatever money you have as in from your job, and keep doing well at your job, get promoted, make more money,
right?
Make a higher earn. If it's your time that you're being compensated for, get more specialization, get more qualifications, get more things that make you, less people in the world can do what you do. And that will equal more money per hour. Mm-hmm. Swapping dollars for hours. I get more dollars per hour I'm spending, and then be disciplined about what you're putting that towards, you know. And my wife and I did not do a good job budgeting any of this. It literally was the fact that we just always had a broken house and had to buy tile, had to buy 2x4s, had to buy this stuff. So we just were forced to spend our money on that stuff to try to put our life back together.
Yeah.
And then we have good liquidity events, if you will, when we sell, when we refinance, and then we try to put it really quickly back into something else that's a bigger investment or whatever. Because if money's sitting around for us, we spend it on the wrong stuff. Yeah. So put it to work. You know, and then at the same time, getting expertise and realizing that expertise is going to pay off. And then I think that we don't do a really good, the book 168 Hours, I've talked about it. It's written by a female entrepreneur. When you break down your week, that's 168 hours is your week.
Right. Yep.
It's very easy to kind of get overwhelmed and task saturated in a 24-hour day, sleeping 8 hours, you know, eating and all that. But there's still, if you break down 168 hours and subtract a 50-hour work week and then say, I'm going to sleep 8 hours a night and I'm going to take, you know, the day of the Sabbath, I'm going to take off. You still have, you know, 30 something hours.
Yeah.
After sleeping 8 hours, after taking Sabbath off, after working 50 hours, which most people don't work 50 hours. I think the average American works 33
yep.
something, you know, because they're jipping their employer on the lunch break, you know, they're taking an hour and 20 minute lunch break when they should right. only, you know.
Yeah.
And so most of us, if you do a real analysis of your time, are wasting a ton of time.
Mm.
And you know, your weekly screen notification on your iPhone will humble you.
That's right.
You yeah. look at that. How much time was I on Instagram?
Yeah.
No way. This got to be wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you see that in your life, you know, that is essentially stuff that you could be putting to use building something,
yeah.
Building a skill.
Yeah.
So, and if you say, oh, I don't have $33,000 to go buy a $175,000 house. Okay. You don't right now, but how can you maybe save up $20,000 to buy a, you know, a less nice house or to buy something cash? You get better at your job, or, you know, I'm going to learn some skills that I don't have in my free time. And it doesn't have to be real estate initially. It can be very small, you know, the ability to sell kind of handmade stuff and the Etsy stuff, the eBay yeah. stuff. I mean, Gary Vaynerchuk does a thing where he goes and buys stuff at garage sales on Saturday and then sells it on eBay for a premium, you yeah. know, and makes right. a couple hundred bucks every Saturday, you know? Yeah. And I think that's just incredibly powerful illustration of how you can turn your time into money creatively. And there's literally no end. I mean, the number of ways that you can do that are as unique as every human being. And yeah. and just kind of putting yourself in, I think that's one way social media is really good mm-hmm. for people, is to just kind of see
yep. exactly.
the things that mm-hmm. that people are doing to make money. I mean, even just having a couple chickens in your garage, you know, and selling some eggs and,
yeah.
and kind of add a couple of those little things together. And then, you know, when you're young, when you're 18, 19, your time is worth almost nothing. You know, where I am now and in my late 30s, I have to be trying to convert my time at a really high rate. And I have to be doing the things that I'm good at.
Yeah.
To keep the businesses running, to whatever. There's not as much pressure early.
Mm-hmm.
Just put and mess up, you know?
Yeah.
And there's
right.
this, I think, I can't remember the name of the article. I found it. There's just incredible pressure in today's day and age of social media that you got to be the man.
Yeah.
You got to figure it out at 18. Mm-hmm. This is what I'm doing. I think that it's probably like, this is not, give yourself grace because you want to play video games, you know, like, hey dude, you're 18, 19 years old. You should be playing a lot less video games, you know, yeah. and that's not producing anything. That's mm-hmm. not productive household.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun. It's entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta, that's what a boy did,
yeah.
you know, put that stuff away.
Mm-hmm.
Or, hey, you love to hang out with certain people and you guys talk about, you know, you overvalue what you guys talk about on the microphone while you're playing those games. Okay, fine. I got it. But let's cut that back.
Mm-hmm.
Let's reallocate that time.
Yeah.
And you'll be surprised what you can accomplish. And the early years are worth more,
mm-hmm.
you know, just like money. You see those charts about what you invest
over
early
time.
On.
Yeah. Right.
Compounding interest. It's the same with time.
Mm-hmm.
The more time you can put towards productive means, the more time you can to put towards getting expertise and things. And literally, you know, Durable Trades talks about it. You look at those, the number of things that are on there that you could do on the weekends. I mean, I know guys that are in the military that build debts on mm-hmm. the weekend.
Yeah.
You know, for clients. And they have, you know, they talk to them about it. Hey, I got a job. These are the weekends I'm going to do. It's going to take a little longer.
Yeah.
You're also learning to talk to clients. You're mm-hmm. learning to budget.
Yeah.
You got the real job that's paying all the bills. So if you're paying for spending money, or you're working for spending money, it's a great time to start working on your margins. What's my overhead? How much time does it take for me really to do this deck? And the opportunities are there. And then there's just, as I don't know if you guys have follow the work, what like Rob Sense is doing with he's the MZ guy out from Moscow.
Oh, that's right. Yep. Yep.
I've talking seen about the Sansdemic and they focused in on the labor force is we're in headed towards a labor crisis. If we're feeling it now, you know, the number of help wanted signs, the number of national chains that are closed a couple of days a week or have shorter hours.
Right.
If you're somebody who wants to work, then you have so much opportunity.
Right now. The field is open right now. There's so much opportunity to.
And if you can't make more than unemployment benefits working or get there quick, because that's the other side of it is it's easy to think, oh, I got this unemployment benefits right now. It's more than I'm making flipping hamburgers.
Mm-hmm.
But that's assuming you're going to stay flipping hamburgers.
Right.
That's selling yourself short.
Mm-hmm.
Like you should be eclipsing your unemployment benefits within a pretty short amount of time if you're a good worker.
Right.
And you got to enter somewhere, and it's going to kind of suck to be doing it. But you get to look at what your manager's doing. Look at what the guy the next way up the line making a little bit more, and what do I got to do? And if you can differentiate yourself and show yourself somebody that's honest and dependable, and they'll show up, then unlimited earning potential. And get out there and do it. And even just, you know, Jordan Peterson had some good stuff about how to just have that conversation with your employer and be looking for another job. And the best way to articulate your worth to your current employer is to have a job offer at a little bit higher rate somewhere else. Say, hey, you know, I want to stay here. I like this. I like working for you. This is where I'm at. What can I do? You know, and actually taking criticism, taking counsel from your bosses and working at that and getting better. Because you don't have to be the guy that knows everything, can see into the future. And, you know, we talk about the implied task versus just the specified task. Say, hey, you had that. I mean, if you're working at McDonald's or you're working at Walmart and you go up to your boss, you say, hey, I'm really trying to find out, see the implied tasks here. I know you told me to do this, but what are some things I'm missing that are kind of implied or that I could figure out? I'm just like, their head would probably explode. That you're even just trying to figure out how to provide more value.
Right.
And maybe make a personal practice. If you're in a generation that can't be without the phone, leave your phone in the glove box when you go into work and have that practice to be the one guy on shift that didn't touch his phone the whole time. That's going to jump out to your employer that you're there, you're aware, your head's on a swivel, you're seeing what's happening. And you know, like there's just so many. I've almost grabbed a couple dudes at Walmart or at the tile loading dock or whatever, and just been like, dude, you're on your phone. And I know you're the guy that loads tile.
Yeah.
And you're helping me load tile. Like I'm here to load tile, and you're helping me load it in the back of my truck or whatever. But right over there is where some drywall fell off the back of a truck, and there's a big old pile of cardboard and drywall stuff. It's front of Lowe's, you know. Yeah. If you went and grabbed a broom and swept that up, or hey, there's five carts out in the bay out there, and there's no carts in the store, and people are walking around looking for them because it's a busy day. You're the guy that runs out there, grabs that cart, runs back. Hey, let's get my workout in too.
Yeah,
put it up there. You know, I'm gonna line them back up neat. You know, I'm not just gonna throw them everywhere. You know, I'm gonna smile at a guy, you know, you walk by and it is in, you're going to manage that Lowe's in no time. You know, you're going to be the guy that's that principle of being faithful and little.
Mm-hmm.
And then the people in charge of you are going to say, hey, I got something. We're going to make you a manager. We're going to make you do this. And, or that's going to be a general contractor that's in there buying stuff that owns his own businesses.
Yep.
Is going to see that hustle and going to give you a job offer right there. Hey, what are they paying you? Okay, how about today we start $15 an hour? I just want you to push a broom on a job site and listen to what my other guys are saying.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we need guys out in every way. So if your boss isn't noticing, you're gonna other people around are gonna notice, and the offer's gonna come to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you're making more money. And I just think that we just want to sit back and, you know, Jesus take the wheel, and, you know, and then even just listening to some of the more recent stuff from Doug and about, you know, being prepared. And it's easy to kind of just say there's victory, you know, and God's going to win. So I get to just kind of sit back and have this kind of fatalist, you know, and talking about how our eschatology influences how we work. Should be changing us and making us work hard. And I think it's tragic, but Christians don't know how to work.
Mm.
We're crappy employees. Yeah. We don't own enough businesses.
Yep.
On average.
Mm.
And for the Christian that cares, the Christian that believes that they have a role in remaking this earth, wide open.
Yeah.
Unlimited potential for you.
Yeah.
Grow your workforce in house. I mean, with that stands the labor crisis. I got three boys. You know, if they don't want to go to college and become a tax attorney because I need that, you know,
yeah, right.
Then hey man, let's figure out how to get you a truck and a trailer, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. I'll buy the Mini X. And you guys, I want you to be the excavating company wing of things. We're going to do a profit share agreement and you're going to build this, this business, starting that when you graduate high school or even at age 16, you know, we've already kind of got our homeschool. We're hybrid. Even this morning, I went out to do some stuff on the land and the boys are like, Mom, can we go? And you know, you kind of see Mom being like, oh, okay, fine. You know, we'll pause what we're doing.
School. Yeah.
Yeah. Go out for two or three hours, help me unload the Mini X, run around on the land a little bit, come back, you know, and gleaning those lessons for how I'm engaging people, you know, and teaching them how to be proactive. And then, all right, you can go back and do some of the sitting at the desk, and knocking out your reading and your math. And I think that's the benefit of a Christian education, a homeschool education, is to kind of give those non-standard things. And if you're, I think it's just crazy the things that my sons are picking up and our daughters are picking up, just watching us reset an Airbnb.
Yeah.
On the phone, talking to a client, my wife and I having that conversation at the dinner table when the message comes in and Airbnb, is for someone on Airbnb is being difficult.
Yeah.
And then me wanting to maybe be nasty. And then my wife saying, hey, you know, no, mm-hmm. we're in hospitality. Let's be kind. And then just kind of watching that, the family businesses.
Yes.
Being run by husband and wife
mm-hmm.
around the table, you know, and they start kind of, why? I don't understand why we're here. It's late, you know, or hey, will you come with me? And to kind of say, well, this guy didn't do the job right. We got to go. You know, got to grab an AC unit because something went out in the rental property and got to go put it in the window so we get there. And they're kind of there for that.
Yeah, they're seeing it all.
And learning that side too. You're talking about that side of entrepreneurship that's not glorious. You know, they're getting the accurate picture, but then also realizing, oh, we can actually live in one end of the house with one fireplace going. And that was actually the funnest winter we ever had.
Right,
You know, we were all in two or three rooms at one end of the house, and we had the fan going and one set of fireplace, and you know, we can make it. We don't actually need all that.
Yeah.
You know, we can take some duct tape and we can make this work, you know?
Yeah. That's great, man. I think you've given myself and everyone a lot to think about, just, you know, through your life and example. And my goals with one of the podcasts, you know, especially kind of moving into a new year, because I've been doing this for about a year, is to really highlight those people and, you know, institutions who really exhibit, like I said, this whole virtus idea, you know, excellence,
mm-hmm.
virtue, manliness, courage, competence, all those things. So I feel like you've really, you know, demonstrated that and given us a lot to think about. So Nate, I really appreciate you coming on, and hope the Lord blesses you in all your endeavors.
Absolutely. Not to get some podcast pointers from you.
Yeah.
I guess one shameless plug too to do this.
Yes.
If everybody goes to www.spearing.co, that's kind of the HQ for everything we got going on. And if you, there's social links up there. So whatever your social media of choice can kind of chain those out and find yep. all the business. We kind of have separate stuff for all our different businesses and I'll give you all that, but would love to continue to interact with anybody out there. If there's something they'd rather go a little bit deeper on specifically, I've had some great conversations, specific questions, guys wanting to do stuff and hopefully as we kind of produce the blog and the podcast and stuff, we'll be able to get more brass tacks on executing some of the stuff with business, with finance, with all that, and see where that goes.
Well, cool. Yeah. Thanks for plugging that. So guys, go check that out. And once again, Nate, thanks for being with me today.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Thanks for listening. Remember that pursuing virtues is a journey, and it's a road that we are always walking. With new information, it's now time to act. So be wise and take responsibility. Be courageous and do what you need to do today.